Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility present the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, committed to a healthy and clean environment, strong communities, and craft beer. AlchemistBeer.com. By Community Capital of Vermont, providing equal access to financing for Vermonters with excellent ideas and the courage and resourcefulness to start and grow small businesses. Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to create a home, business, and community-based energy system that's clean, reliable, and cost-effective. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable child care in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. And by UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine, as well as nearly 700 BBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more from www.vbsr.org.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Don Mayer began selling Apple computers out of his garage in Warren in 1994. That business blossomed into Small Dog Electronics, which is now the largest independent Apple reseller in the country. Mayer has just announced that he is retiring and selling his iconic Vermont company. WDEV listeners will also know him as the host of Small Dog Speaks, which ran for a number of years on this radio station. Don Mayer, welcome back to WDEV and the Vermont Conversation.
It's great to be here back in the WDEV studios.
So, now that you're kind of, we're bookending the Small Dog story, take us back to the beginning, the first bookend. How did you end up deciding to start a computer company?
Well, I'd actually had another computer company prior to that. It was called Maya Computer Company in Waitsfield. And that one lasted for a couple of years, and we had some growth issues, so we ended up going out of business. And then I worked for a company that was a software developer. And so I was sort of out of a job, and I was sort of sitting in the summer watching my small dogs play and said, okay, what should I be doing? And I'd been involved in finding Macs for my friends and neighbors, and finding them meant I was looking for used Macs or refurbished Macs, and I had gotten sort of involved with Apple on these refurbished products, and I started going to auctions. Apple, before Steve Jobs came back, had a big problem in maintaining their inventory. They made too many. And then they changed the model, and they'd have all these models that they couldn't get rid of. And they basically held large public auctions twice a month in different cities across the country. And I'd hop on an airplane and go out there and start buying stuff. And normally I was only buying a couple, two or three, and then I decided, well, maybe this could be a business. So I maxed out my credit cards at an auction down in Washington, D.C., and rented a U-Haul and brought enough Macs back to my house that filled my garage and half my living room, and started selling these. And, you know, I sold some of them in Vermont, but I was also had a sort of part-time gig with America Online back in the days where they were sending out thousands of little discs. And I was ad rep Don, and that meant I was in charge of maintaining the classified ads, and my compensation was I got free classified ads. So I would place ads for these Macs, and I was getting orders every single day, and it became very successful, and that was sort of the origin of Small Dog Electronics.
What was the beginning? I mean, back when you started in the mid-90s, the competition between PCs and Macs was pretty fierce. And as I recall, Macs were kind of the lonely stepchild of PCs, which dominated the market back then. Where did you get the idea that you know, you were, the world was going to find salvation through Macs.
You know, it came earlier. I started Northwind Power Company, which later became Northern Power Systems. And towards the end of my tenure there, we had a confluence of two major government contracts. And I was faced with a decision. Am I going to, you know, automate, or am I going to hire a lot of clerical personnel? And back then, we were still using, you know, IBM MagCard typewriters and stuff. And so I decided I'd automate. And a thing that I discovered right away was when I put a Mac on a employee's desk, they ended up producing useful work by the end of the day. And when I put a PC on their desk, it took a week. And so I immediately started buying used Macs to put on people's desks, and buying laser writers for our printers, and modernizing the Northern Power Systems facility with Macs. And, you know, when I left the company, I said, well, maybe there's a business there. And that's when we started Maya Computer Company.
So this is quite a stretch. Northern Power making alternative energy sort of systems of various sorts. How did that fit into your skill set?
Well, that's a long journey. I came to Vermont to go to Goddard College. And when I was at Goddard College, I met a couple professors, Dave Sellers, who's an architect from Warren, and Scott Nielsen, who lived in Plainfield. And we got really excited about renewable energy. And as part of my education, I began to get very involved in analyzing renewable energy. I happened to be living on a farm up in northern Vermont, in North Wolcott, and we had no power, and we had no running water. And I started playing around with appropriate technology. We built water pumps. We built wind turbines. We built methane digesters. We did all kinds of things to provide us with the kind of energy we needed to run that particular location. So it was both personal for me and sort of exciting because it was a new area of technology.
Did you know anything about?
I knew nothing. I just knew I had an interest, and I got incredible encouragement from Dave and Scott, and Goddard College is an amazing place, and you talk to graduates of Goddard, and they talk about the Goddard experience as being something special, and it's not something you can sit there and put into words, but what it did for me was take me and focus my energy on something that was meaningful. When I came to Goddard, I had no idea. I said I wanted to be a teacher. And they said, okay, great. Here's a school, the new school in Plainfield. Why don't you go up there and help out for, you know, a couple days a week? And I went up there and I decided, well, I didn't really want to hang out with young kids all day. I had three of my own, and, you know, that was enough. So I started looking at other stuff, and that's when I hooked up with Dave, who, really encouraged me. And, you know, Dave and I started Northwind Power Company together. He was my partner, and, we developed a lifelong friendship.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and we're talking with Don Mayer, the founder of Small Dog Electronics. And for those of you who are devoted WDEV listeners, you'll recognize his voice as the one behind Small Dog Speaks. You can join this conversation at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. And you might even see test his, computer troubleshooting chops and see if he's still as sharp as he was when he was on the air here, and ask him your own computer questions.
Yeah, that might not be fair, because I always had these other people with me. I had Rebecca, who's my head tech, and I had Emily. So we'll see what happens.
So you're saying you were like the straight guy, and they were
right.
The
comedians. Yeah. I was feeding them the jokes, right?
So, take us back to Small Dog starts. You're getting free classifieds on AOL, and you start getting business, and you're still running this thing out of your garage.
Yeah, it was just me, and I would go to the auctions. I'd buy the computers. I'd get them back to Vermont. I'd post the ads. I'd sell them. I'd ship them out. I'd write the little shipping thing in the little UPS book. And my son would come over on weekends and help me out with the books, because I've never really been good at keeping the books. And he was, he was good at that. So he would come over and help me out. It kept getting busier and busier. And He was working at a software manufacturer up in Essex, and I ended up having to put my inventory somewhere, so they rented me some space there. And it just got so big that I came to him one day and said, look, I'll give you half the company if you come help me with this. And it turned out to be a good time in his life to do that, so he joined me at that point. And, you know, then we said, okay, what are we going to do? And so we're going to these auctions. We're really doing a lot of business with these refurbished Macs. And we said, you know, can we afford another employee? And we had a friend, Art Hendrickson, and we said, oh, let's hire Artie. Do you think we'll have any work for him? And turns out we never looked back. Artie is still an employee of Small Dog Electronics, a key employee. He runs our inventory control and warehousing and shipping operations, but he's been with us for the entire time. And so it grew pretty quickly. Became an authorized Apple, at first a value-added reseller, and started selling new Macs as well as refurbished. We tore up my strawberry patch at my house and built a little office building, which is now part of my house, which lasted only about a year and a half. We're in that building. We had 10 or 12 people working up on Prickly Mountain at my house, and at one point, the zoning administrator was a little bit concerned with the traffic, and we knew that we couldn't continue to do that. The UPS drivers were amazing. They would be climbing up my icy driveway, loaded with Macs in their arms, going up and going down. And we've been a fan of UPS ever since, because they were real heroes. But eventually, we said, "Well, we got to have our own facility," and that's when we ended up moving down to Waitsfield.
Now, you were just a mail order operation. You were selling through these classified ads. What made you decide to have a storefront?
So it's a little bit of progression. We weren't strictly mail order other than the classified ads. What we was an internet play. We would actually buy these products at auction, and then we'd send out a faxed price list to hundreds of dealers across the country who would then buy some of the products from us. And then around 98 or 99, we decided we needed a website. And we were one of the first people out there with a website, and one of the first people out there that had e-commerce as well. And we launched smalldoggy.com. Back in 98 or so. And we couldn't get smalldog.com because a record label had that, Small Dog Records. And then about 3 years later, Small Dog Records said they were going out of business and would we like their URL? And I said, sure, what do you want for it? And it turned out they wanted a Duo computer. I don't know if you remember the Duos, but that was one of the first Apple portable computers. So we traded him a Duo for the name and changed the name to smalldog.com. But that was, our business was about 85 or 90% internet at that point. We were selling tons and tons of refurbished product. Apple was working with us very closely. We would get a call at the end of a quarter, and it was literally, we have all this stuff in the warehouse. Would you like it? And we would say, sure, send it on out. And we would buy truckloads of stuff. At one point, we bought 13 semis full of product from Apple. And it was so much, we had to rent an extra warehouse up in Essex. But it was, it was the heyday. This was around 2000 or so. And then Apple suddenly decided, hey, we can sell this stuff online too. And so they opened a online store and started selling the refurbished products themselves. And we went, in 2001, went from buying about $10 million of refurbished product from Apple to buying less than $1 million in the course of a year. And so at that point, I gathered together my board of advisors and my employees. And I said, okay, we need to replace $9 or $10 million worth of business. What are we going to do? And we decided that the first step was to try retail. And we opened our first retail store in Waitsfield at our headquarters. And that was mostly to deal with the live customers who were coming in. Live customers would come to us even though we didn't have a retail store, and we would often see them wandering among the stacks of the inventory. And it really came to a head one day when I was doing payroll, and I had a family of customers visiting, and they were sitting on the couch next to my desk, sort of looking over my shoulder. And I said, we got to do something. And so we opened a small retail store. The notion was really just to focus the live customers there, but it did a little bit better than we thought, and so we were into retail. And, you know, as we were looking at this, we said, okay, well, a good portion of our customers were coming from Chittenden County, and they were driving all the way to Waitsfield, you know, good hour drive, to come see us at our store. And so what if we opened a retail store in the Burlington area? Well, on my board of advisors was a selectman from South Burlington, and he said, well, I know this place that has been vacant for a couple of years. It would be really good. And another was a real estate developer, and he said, yeah, I know the landlord. And literally, this was in August, and by October 1st, we had opened the South Burlington store, which has been a great success for us.
And that's on Dorset Street, and it's in a funny-looking building with kind of like a lighthouse-looking.
Yeah, we've got a tower. It's our sort of landmark, but we're right across from Barnes & Noble.
Right, right. So we're talking, for those of you just tuning in, we're talking with Don Mayer. He is the founder and owner of Small Dog Electronics, and you can ask him your own question, be it about computers or about life or whatever, at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Small Dog has a social mission. Talk about what it is, why this isn't just a regular business trying to turn a profit. How is it different?
So, I mean, it started out, you know, as we looked at hiring our first employee, we sort of said, well, how are we going to deal with having employees? And we saw no reason that our employees shouldn't be treated well and paid well and have some of the same privileges that we enjoyed as employees of the company. And so it was employees first that got us into our social mission. So then we looked at, okay, we wanted, you know, good health insurance for ourselves and for our families, and why shouldn't our employees have that too? So we extended it to that. And then we said, well, what if somebody gets hurt? And we said, well, we should provide disability insurance. And then we said, well, what if somebody's dog gets hurt? What are we going to do about that? You know, and I don't want an employee choosing between money and their dog, especially when our name was Small Dog Electronics. So we provided dog insurance for up to two dogs per employee. Now, we've had employees over the years ask us to extend that to cats and rabbits and all kinds of animals, but we just point out that the name is Small Dog Electronics, so
and
we don't have to deal with that.
We did sort of skip over the name. What's the dog thing about?
Well, the dog thing was somewhat accidental. Back in the days of Maya Computer, we were looking to change the name of the company and restart the company. And an employee, Wendy Cohen, suggested Small Dog Electronics. Because I had a little small Pomeranian, and Happy had one, and there was a couple other small dogs running around. And I totally poo-pooed the idea and said, that's a horrible idea. Forget it. So you fast forward a few years when I'm sitting there looking for a name for, you know, a new company, and I said, well, hey, Small Dog Electronics. And, you know, the notion for me was keep the word small in the name because I had most fun and made most money when I had kept my company small. And, you know, that was a lesson for me. I don't know if I've ever really obeyed that lesson or learned from it, but it was a lesson. And then the dog thing has been awesome for us. You know, we obviously love dogs, and gives us great opportunities for marketing and for visual images and such like that. And we always have dogs at all of our facilities.
Is there a downside to the name? Are there people who show up looking for pet food or dog haters who would rather buy from any place than something called Small Dog?
I don't know of very many dog haters, so I don't think there's many dog haters. But, I mean, at first we were not taken very seriously by vendors. You know, we'd go out to somebody like Adobe or Microsoft or even Apple and say, hey, our name's Small Dog Electronics, and they, you know, start snickering. But as we grew and we showed that we had the expertise and we knew what we were doing and we were a legitimate business, it was, Apple didn't name itself, data this or tech that. They named themselves Apple. And we looked at it basically the same way. Small Dog Electronics was a name that we felt we really could take advantage of and live with.
There is a mystique around Apple, the secrecy around the release of its products, the kind of almost cultishness around it. Talk a little bit about that. Where did that come from? How has that hurt or helped you in your work?
Well, yes, there's secrecy, but I think it's necessary in the very rapid moving technology industry. Before Steve Jobs came back, you may have remembered that there were clones. There were clones of Macs, and this is something that Steve had never really wanted to do, but with the next CEO sort of said, well, let's try cloning. And so there were a handful of clone companies, and they would come out, and they would basically push the window of what was acceptable with the operating system on the Mac side. And it ended up not working out very well. And the key to Apple products always have been the overall ecosystem. If you look at Apple now, your phone, your iPad, your Mac, your HomePod, all are interconnected. You start a calendar event and one of them shows up on all of them. Your files are kept up in the cloud. It's a very comprehensive platform. But it's also a very, very competitive industry. So obviously you don't want Samsung to know everything about the next phone you're going to introduce, and you don't want Dell to know everything about the next Mac you're going to introduce. So there is a level of secrecy that is involved that is necessary for good product development.
Did you know Steve Jobs?
I had the pleasure of meeting him once.
This is a guy who's really an iconic figure in the world of business as an innovator, as a disruptor of things. Whether you observed him from afar or up close, what do you think was special about Steve Jobs?
I really think Steve was a visionary. He understood not what this product that is out right now is capable of doing, but what it should be capable of doing in the future. And so he had his eye on the future. It's almost as if he was a time traveler, that he knew what was going to happen in the future, and he was developing products for that future. He had a passion about excellence in the products that has not been matched. I mean, he was into every single little detail of the product. And sometimes that was incredibly successful, and other times not so successful. But a true genius and visionary.
What did you think when they went into phones? I mean, the traditional domain of, like, AT&T.
You know, the phone thing was a little bit strange for us. I was on the Apple reseller advisory board at the time, and as such, I got special VIP tickets to the introduction of the iPhone. And so we were all amazed as Steve introduced the iPhone, and we were awed and looked forward to selling it. And then the head of our channel sales took us in the back room and said, boys, because it was all men, you guys aren't going to be able to sell this. And all our faces just dropped. And it's still to that day, Apple will not sell phones to resellers. If we want to sell the phone, we have to have a contract with AT&T or Verizon or somebody else.
Huh. But your store does sell iPhones.
We do not sell iPhones at this time. We used to sell them. We used to have a contract with AT&T. But they came to us and they told us they wanted us to look like every other AT&T store. And I said, well, no, we're an Apple store. We're not a cell phone store. Cell phones are sort of, minor. So we dropped that contract with AT&T, and we may pick up one again. But I think most likely, if I look in the future and try to be a little bit of a visionary, I think Apple will start selling the phones back to the resellers and allow people to choose whatever carrier they want. That's the trend we see as phones are now being purchased rather than sort of rented on a contract. And I think that, you know, the economics of the iPhone are very much in favor of Apple, but not very much in favor of the cell phone carrier nor the reseller. When we were selling iPhones, we'd have to pay the whole $700-$800 for an iPhone, sell it to a customer for $100 or $200, and hope that the customer paid their bills so we'd get the balance from the carrier. So it wasn't a very great economic model.
What's the landscape look like now in terms of how much of the market is PC, how much is Apple, and also what portion of Apple's business is iPhones versus computers?
Well, a huge portion is iPhones. I mean, they sell literally millions and tens of millions of those, so I think it's 60 or 70% of their business is iPhones. However, the Mac business is very strong, and it's not, you know, it's not 20% of the market, probably. It's probably less than 20%, but it's a good portion. We sell a lot to the U.S. government, and one of the ways I measure the Mac's success is what are we seeing in terms of sales to the government? And if you look at, we have a contract with the FBI, as an example, and the Navy and the Army, they're all buying Macs. They're not buying PCs right now.
How'd you win them over?
It was a lot of hard work.
All right. Well, we should take a break for the news. We're talking with Don Mayer. He is the founder and owner of Small Dog Electronics. He has recently announced that he is retiring and selling his company. We're going to talk some about that after a short break. I'm David Goodman. You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after the news.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman is underwritten in part by Community Capital of Vermont, Green Mountain Power, The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, and by Let's Grow Kids, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're spending the hour with a Vermont business icon. Don Mayer is the founder of Small Dog Electronics. He began selling computers out of his garage in Warren in 1994. And now Small Dog has become the largest independent Apple reseller in the country. Don, you've just announced that you are hoping to retire and you want to sell the company. How did you come to that decision?
The retirement part came pretty easy. I've always wanted to retire by the time I was 70, and I'll be 70 in February. So last year I sort of told my employees and then told my customers that that's what I'm going to do. I have worked my entire life, and I feel that, you know, it's time to spend time with my wife, who's already retired. So that's what's going to happen. And, you know, we know that the company is going to require leadership and capital resources that I'm not going to be able to provide going forward. And so that's why we're looking for new partners or a potential sale of the company.
So this isn't just any company. You have had a very strong social mission. You've also been a leader for many years in Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. Talk about the social mission that you've tried to pursue with your company. What matters to you?
What matters to me is measuring our success. You know, one way to measure success is how many $100 bills you can load up on your table. And too many companies just do that. I think that we have a much greater responsibility. If you look at the word incorporate, and I took 4 years of Latin in high school, and so I'm always tearing words apart. And if you look at incorporate, what it means is to form a body. And so when you incorporate a business, you're forming a body in society. And that body has a greater impact on society, environment, your employees, your vendors, than any individual. And with that comes a much greater responsibility. So we measure our success by the triple bottom line of people, planet, and profit. And I talked a little bit about people, but let's talk about planet. Early on, as we were buying, you know, refurbished goods and discontinued goods, we'd buy truckloads of this stuff, and some of it was garbage. Basically, you know, it was an obsolete product. Nobody was going to want it, and we would toss it in the dumpster. And we were working with a company up in Burlington, Marketing Partners, and, you know, we started talking about e-waste and started educating ourselves about what was contained in the products that we were willy-nilly tossing in the dumpster. And it turns out that there was some pretty dangerous stuff in there. There was flame retardants and mercury and leaded glass and all kinds of stuff that shouldn't end up in the landfill. And so we launched our e-waste initiative. And initially it was, okay, we'll take your e-waste. If you're buying a new computer, bring us your old stuff. We'll take it and take care of it for you. And then we decided one Earth Day that we would offer a free e-waste recycling. And we scheduled a four-hour period in South Burlington to collect e-waste. And we figured we'd get, oh, maybe 5 tons of e-waste and budgeted for that and had adequate trucks for that. And by the time I arrived in South Burlington about 7:30, there was a line around the block of cars waiting to drop off e-waste. And instead of 5 tons, we generated a mountain of e-waste that was 50 tons of e-waste that sat in the parking lot up by 100 Dorset Street. So we did these large e-waste events a number of years, I mean, for 4 or 5 years, and they kept growing. I mean, I think the biggest one was 150 tons, and we actually closed down I-89 because there was so much traffic coming to the e-waste event. But that raised awareness of the e-waste issue and really ended up with Vermont passing one of the strongest and most comprehensive electronic waste laws in the country, where literally it's free to get rid of your e-waste at almost any landfill now. So that was a big initiative for us, and one that we feel we were very successful with. We still accept e-waste at all of our stores. The other is a solar array. Dave Blittersdorf from All Earth Renewable was on the VBSR board with me. He said, you know, Don, you really need a solar array. And I said, yeah, but I can't afford it. And so we worked out a deal, and we put in a very large solar array in some land that we had by our facility in Waitsfield that provides right now 100% of the power that we need for both Waitsfield and South Burlington. So we're pretty self-sufficient in terms of electricity from the power that we're generating from the solar array that Dave convinced me to buy.
What's the most challenging thing for you about being a socially responsible business person versus just a conventional one?
You know, I don't know there. I don't know how to be a conventional business person. I think that, you know, business brings responsibility. And Vermont is very, very special that you take anybody from the from our icon Ben and Jerry's ice cream company to our largest utility, Green Mountain Power, and we're talking about socially responsible businesses. And you've got an organization in Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility that is the largest socially responsible business organization in the country. Not per capita, it is simply the largest.
From the smallest, one of the smallest states.
From the smallest state, right.
As you think about selling the company, how do you ensure that it remains a socially responsible business?
Well, basically because I won't sell it to anybody that it doesn't understand and agree to abide by our DNA. You know, I look at the three things that a potential owner or investor in Small Dog Electronics would have to have. One is access to capital. We're a very capital-intensive business. You know, we just sold $1 million worth of iPads to the U.S. government for the Mariana school system out in the South Pacific. And, you know, we're going to make 3 or 4 points on that, but it's, you know, it's not 20 or 30 points. So it takes a lot of money to buy the gear. And then, you know, it's a lot of capital required in terms of the inventory and order fulfillment portion of the business. The second is an understanding and passion for technology. Someone really has to understand just how quickly technology moves. I've been involved in technology for 50 years, and I am just amazed at how quickly. I mean, we've gone from, you know, bag phones to iPhones in what seems to be a blink of an eye. And every day we're looking at changes in the technology that we're offering to our customers, changes in the software and changes in the hardware. And you really have to enjoy those changes in order to understand the business. And the third and most important for Small Dog Electronics is a commitment to socially responsible business practices.
Now, some of those practices, I know you have worked to pay your employees $15 an hour, absent an actual law requiring you to. And you've been very involved in charitable giving. In fact, if you go on the Small Dog website and you buy something, you can't leave without clicking yes or no about making a charitable donation. Tell us about that.
So, you know, I have to give some credit to Troy Kingsbury from the Village Grocery. Troy used to work for me and was the service manager, and he and I would be the first ones to show up at work and have a cup of coffee together. And he came in one day and said, "Hey, what if we allow our customers to, you know, make a charitable contribution in the shopping cart?" And I said, "That's a great idea, but what if we matched it?" Because I had this problem. Happy would come to me every quarter and say, "You have X thousands of dollars to give away to charitable organizations, and you got like 3.5 days to do it." And I would be scrambling. I'd be looking and asking my friends and neighbors, who should I give this money to? Because I really wanted to make a difference. Well, with this process, we chose nonprofits and charitable organizations that met our criteria for the type of organizations that we wanted to support. And these were issues of human rights and women's rights and gay and lesbian rights and dog rights and environmental protection. And, you know, these were the kind of organizations that we wanted to support. And so we chose about 8 or 9 of those and put them up on the website and now match customer contributions to those organizations to the extent of the budget that we have for charitable contributions.
So I'm looking at the Small Dog website now and the 8 options that are up there: Amnesty International, Earth Trust, National Disabilities, Dog Foundation, okay, National Disaster Search Dog Foundation, Prevent Child Abuse Vermont, Planned Parenthood, Puppy Mill Rescue, Vermont Food Bank, and AMFAR AIDS Research. Those are your current ones.
Those are the current ones, yes.
Do you know how much you've generated in charitable donations over the years? Doing that?
Hundreds of thousands. I mean, you know, I'll give you an example. During the Haitian earthquake, we opened this up a bit, and it sort of went viral.
This was 2010, that earthquake.
That's right. And so we were matching contributions to the customers made, and that went viral. And in the course of 24 hours, we ended up donating about $35,000 to matching that for hurricane relief, earthquake relief.
We're talking with Don Mayer, the founder and owner of Small Dog Electronics. So, Don, as computers and iPhones have evolved, they are encroaching on every aspect of life and privacy. And I know you're also in the business of selling home automation systems, surveillance systems that people can have in their own homes. Do you worry about privacy and the potential for abuse?
You know, I do, but I'm not obsessed with it. You know, I've sort of resigned myself to, if I'm going to have electronic devices connected to the internet, there is some risk that some information might, you know, get out. I'm awful careful with my credit card numbers and social security numbers and stuff like that. So I've practiced safe computing. But we live in a time where privacy is being redefined. You know, if you go to, you know, most countries in the world, you have cameras in literally every location recording your every move. And it's a little 1984-ish, but that's the world that we live in now.
What do you think, you know, where do you draw the line? Where do you feel like you don't want to go? And, you know, I often think, you know, we're giving away our privacy. Every time our phone asks us, do you want to allow this app to know your location? And of course, our phones can do really cool things when we just say yes to everything.
Right. My phone will, you know, turn on my lights when I arrive home. They'll unlock my door. They'll turn my heating up or down. I mean, and that's based upon my location. So I don't know that I've drawn a firm line. I think that, again, you want to be very careful with what information you're letting out there. And, you know, and right, educate yourself on what is safe and what is not.
So what information should people not let out there? When should they say no to that helpful prompt from their phone?
I think that if it's it's really difficult. I mean, if you look at the recent news about Google, where even if you turned off location services, they were still following you. I think it's very, very slippery slope. Apple, on the other hand, has a corporate commitment to privacy that actually has, you know, gotten them into a little bit of trouble from time to time. But their commitment is complete on the privacy end. So that, I don't want to mean an Apple commercial here, but I think that you have a much better advantage when you're using an Apple product than you do if you're using a PC or an Android product.
Who are some of your, you know, you've described being almost an accidental businessman. Who are your mentors?
Well, I've had a number of mentors over the year, but I mean, my mentor in the beginning was Dave Sellers. Dave, as my college professor and later as my business partner, was always encouraging me to do what I felt was necessary in order to make the business a success. And it was, you know, there was never any bad ideas. And he taught me one of the things that's really helped me over the course of my business career, and that is I used to be really negative. Somebody would, you know, suggest an idea, and I would immediately try to shoot holes in the idea and be very negative about it. And he took me aside one day and said, "You know, Don, this is really stifling creativity, and you've got to look at the positive aspects of a new idea before you look at any negative aspects." And like a light went off, and I said, "Wow, this guy is right." And so I completely changed how I approached meetings, how I approached interactions with employees and vendors by saying, okay, let's be more positive about those original ideas and see what happens.
So now that Small Dog is for sale, let's say a young version of Don Mayer walks in the door. She has the capital, but maybe doesn't have the know-how and wisdom that you've gained over not just a quarter century running Small Dog, but in your prior lives. As what is your advice to her about how to be successful at this?
So, you know, we're a retail business, and a woman almost, you know, fitting your description, came to work for me once. And she handed me a book, and the title of the book was Customer Satisfaction is Nothing, Customer Loyalty is Everything. And the book sort of sucked. But the message on the front was absolutely true, that a satisfied customer still may go and shop at Best Buy if they get a slightly better price, but a loyal customer has other reasons to come shop at your facility. We've long had a philosophy at Small Dog Electronics to make customers for life. We want to go the extra mile. That's why our motto is always by your side. And I think that leads to loyal customers. We have some 30, 40,000 people that read my newsletter every single week. And, you know, it's those loyal customers that sustain the company. So developing that type of community amongst your business, you know, being more than just, you know, a box mover, being somebody who really understands the commitment to people, planet, and profit is really vital to business success.
In your lifetime, not just your business, but every business has been dramatically disrupted by the likes of Amazon. And it's like it used to be big box stores, you know, Walmart and Best Buy and Circuit City that were the big challenge. But of course, those have had their own struggles. There is no more Circuit City, for example. But Amazon is remarkable at how many businesses it has disrupted. How does a business survive in the age of Amazon?
Well, they have a name for it now. It's called showrooming. And basically what happens is customers will come into our store and look at our products and ask my employees to tell them everything they know about the Mac. And then they'll go off and buy it from Amazon to save a little bit of sales tax. It's a real difficult problem. And it's the reason that overall, retail is suffering. You're looking at Toys R Us going out and other companies going out. The number of independent Apple resellers has declined significantly. It's because of showrooming and companies like Amazon. You know, I live on both sides of the fence. We do sell online and we do have retail stores. But I'm a firm believer that the playing field should be equal and that sales tax needs to be collected on Internet sales. However, the issue then becomes a little bit more technical because, it's you know, there are literally thousands of taxing jurisdictions. And so for a small company to set up and pay and do the reports for all those entities is very difficult and could kill a company.
So Internet sales tax, now the Supreme Court has just said that it is legal, it is permissible for states to charge it. The 7% that you could, Amazon has been charging it now in Vermont for a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the difference between selling a product and not that sales tax?
It is, especially nowadays when the margin on the product is so small. Apple gives us about 8% on a Mac. So if I can offer a customer an additional 7% discount on that Mac due to sales tax, that's huge. You know, and that's a real competitive edge. And so there's a reason that we sell a lot of Macs into New York State, because we don't have to pay New York State sales tax. But we're now starting to get letters from taxing authorities in different states and asking us to collect sales tax from them. We just instituted one for Kentucky as an example. But it's going to be difficult. Even if you look at Vermont, I mean, we have local option taxes in various towns that are anywhere from a half a point to a point. We have a store in Florida. They have a local option taxes. Each county has a different tax. So for a small business to figure out how to do that, it's going to be time-consuming and very, very expensive. The solution, I think, is a centralized clearinghouse where perhaps we set up a national collection bureau of some sort to collect sales tax and distribute it back to the states.
So you're, with any luck, about to have some free time on your hands. You already split your time between, is it Key West?
Key West, yep.
Where you have a store. What are you going to do now that you're pushing 70? What do you hope to do more of?
Well, I'm not going to be fishing, and I'm not going to be sitting around doing nothing. I did promise myself and my wife that I wouldn't make any firm commitments for a year, so just to give me some time to think about stuff. But we do want to do some traveling, got some places on our bucket list, and I think that I am really concerned about the upcoming elections in 2018 and 2020. So I think I'll be involved in terms of helping some political campaigns, both here in Vermont, nationally, and in Florida, and probably put my energies towards some nonprofit organizations as I move on beyond Small Dog.
Hmm. This idea, so you have now, your retail locations are Waitsfield, Vermont, South Burlington, and Key West.
That's correct.
What's the difference between somebody who walks into that Key West store and somebody who walks into the Waitsfield store?
Oh, huge difference. I mean, Key West is a fairly unique market. First of all, our store is 150 miles from any store that sells any Apple products. So we've got a pretty captive marketplace. About half our business down there is tourist business. People that have come on the cruise ships and forgotten a charger, just dropped their phone in the ocean, or, any number of issues there. So about, we have good local business and then another section, which is the tourists. And we also have a pretty strong home automation business down there because the real estate market there is churning all the time. So new homeowners come in and they want to talk about automated blinds or automated lights or locks and stuff like that. So it's a pretty vibrant market down there. And, we tend to sell more colors down there than we do up here for some reason.
Hmm. How do you feel about the future of your business and your own future?
Oh, I'm wild. I'm a perpetual optimist. So I'm very optimistic and very excited about what the future may bring.
Tell me one mistake, and the belief that we learn more from our mistakes than our successes. Tell me the best lesson you've learned from your mistakes over the years.
Never open a store in a mall. We opened a store in Manchester, New Hampshire. It was a total disaster.
Okay, well, I guess that'll be your parting words to live by. Don Mayer, thank you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
It was a pleasure.
Don Mayer is the founder and owner of Small Dog Electronics. Started in 94, now the largest Apple reseller in the country. He has just announced that he is retiring and selling the company. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. You can hear this and all Vermont Conversations at VermontConversation.com. Tune in next Wednesday at 1 for another Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening.
The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable child care in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. By Community Capital of Vermont, providing equal access to financing for Vermonters with excellent ideas and the courage and resourcefulness to start and grow small businesses. Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to create a home, business, and community-based energy system that's clean, reliable, and cost-effective. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, committed to a healthy and clean environment, strong communities, and craft beer, alchemistbeer.com. And by UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more from www.vbsr.org.